Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino with you. 201-939-4513 is the phone number. We'll take your calls in about 15 minutes, but we have two guests today. We're going to kind of squeeze your calls in right in between. And our first guest is Matt Miller. He's on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. He's from Bleacher Report. He's got his Stick to Football podcast, his NFL Draft 400. You can find links to that from his Twitter page. Matt, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino. How are you, bud?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. Sorry we didn't get to do this at the Combine, but good to talk to you.
No problem. We have Zach Diasa to blame for that. That's okay. And Matt, unfortunately, has a sick kid at home. As a father of an eight-month-old, I feel your pain. So we'll keep Matt for about 15 minutes. And so let's get right to it, Matt. Talking to GMs around the league, and I know you talk to a lot of these scouts and GMs, one thing we've discussed on this show a lot in the past few weeks has been positional value versus player value. The Giants will have a chance to draft probably the two highest graded players in the draft when they select second overall, Quentin Nelson and Saquon Barkley. Yet these two players play two positions that most don't consider the highest value of spots. From your conversations, how much do general managers really worry about positional value when you're picking, say, as high as the Giants do? And are Nelson and Barkley so good that they overwhelm that concern?
Well, I think there are two different schools of thought. Like, you can have the guys who say positional value matters. If you're drafting in the top five, you have to take a quarterback, especially in a year where we have four quarterbacks that are expected to go in the top five or six picks. And then you have the other guys. And I think that you can look at what Dave Gettleman did in Carolina. I think he falls more into the school of thought of, let's just draft the best players because we're trying to build a roster and we're trying to build a culture and a system. So if Saquon's the top guy on your board, that's who you draft. And we saw him take Christian McCaffrey last year in the top 10. So he's not afraid to take a running back early. And also the value of the guards that they had. You know, Andrew Norwell, now the highest paid guard in football. Trey Turner, he loved guards when he was at Carolina. And maybe they weren't early draft picks, but I think you see that he does value the entire roster. And really, I feel like we can look at the last 4 years and say that those trends have changed because, you know, we got Todd Gurley going top 10, Fournette going four, Elliott going four, and now if Saquon makes it, you know, to pick six or seven, I think that's going to be a bit of a surprise.
Matt, when we look at this draft, and we've been talking about it since before the Combine, that there's probably going to be a lot of volatility. Heck, the Jets already moved up to the third spot with the Colts. And everybody thinks that the top five and certainly the top 10 will be fertile for trades. My question to you is, are we overhyping this? Do you think when it's all said and done, when we get to April 26th, we're sitting here watching the draft come off the board, that nobody winds up trading anybody, and everybody winds up staying where they are, and they pick what they're going to pick instead of making all these moves that we've been talking about for months?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all because we've already seen a lot of the trades, right? So like you said, the Jets have already moved up. The Bills have already moved up once. They might be a team that moves up again. The Rams have already traded their first-round pick. And so it does become a situation where it's like, okay, well, what else? What other trades are there that could happen? I think it comes down to if someone starts to fall. If we see one of the quarterbacks start to fall, then maybe someone trades up. If Bradley Chubb started to fall, maybe someone would be willing to trade up to get a premier pass rusher. But you guys hold the keys at number two because we know the Browns are going to take a quarterback. And it, depending on who you talk to, a lot of folks believe it'll be Sam Darnold. Some think it'll be Josh Allen. So you at least have an idea of what the Giants are going to look at number two. But the fact that they haven't traded the pick yet, and I know there have been calls, kind of makes me think they're not going quarterback. They want to get one of these, you know, Bradley Chubb or Saquon Barkley or Quentin Nelson. But you also got a new GM with new owners, and it's a tricky situation because you have a Hall of Fame quarterback there, and you've got some really good receivers and a pretty good defense still. So it kind of makes you think that maybe they want to just try to reopen that window and maybe make a playoff run because there is a lot of talent on the roster. They don't necessarily need to blow everything up and start over.
Let me hit the rewind button and go back about 20 seconds. You said concretely the Browns are taking a quarterback. I heard you say that. Now, you weren't saying
which one.
But you did say they are taking one. And while I think all of us think that there's logic in the Browns doing that, especially in light of what's gone on there since they came back into the league, there's still that small possibility that that does not happen. Is there not?
I don't think so. There's
no
way that Sasha Brown got fired because he passed on two quarterbacks.
Okay.
Traded out of Carson Wentz.
Okay.
Traded out of Deshaun Watson.
All right.
If John Dorsey's a brave guy, I don't think he's brave enough to look at Jimmy Haslam and say, hey, we're going to take a running back first and take a quarterback at four. You could end up with, you know, the third best quarterback on the board, which might not be an awful situation. But, man, I think they hired those dudes to go in there and pick a quarterback, and they've got some really good evaluators. That's a front office that went from, I think, maybe the worst in the NFL to arguably one of the best, and hopefully we see that actually come to fruition in the draft.
Yeah, Browns fans have certainly earned that, needless to say. you mentioned that maybe if a quarterback starts to fall, and I would imagine it would probably be the fourth quarterback that's left, maybe a team would trade up. But like you said, the Giants hold the keys, Matt. If a team believes in two of these quarterbacks, let's say, more than the others, and the Browns pick one, and there's one left at two for the Giants, do you think a team like Denver at five would be willing to give up, say, their one next year and their two this year, or a team like Buffalo would unload the truck with three ones, a two, maybe even another later round pick? Do you think there's enough separation in GM's minds in this class to make it worth the type of haul the Giants would want to move out of that two spot? Will a team show up and back up the truck for them?
I do think it's possible. And you mentioned Buffalo. Buffalo has two twos, two threes, two ones. They could be the team that blows you away. I think the hard part is, you know, these quarterbacks have been like billed as, we're going to see four quarterbacks in the top five. But when you actually start to talk to people, everyone kind of feels like these guys all have weaknesses. So you're not trading up for Andrew Luck. You're not trading up for Jared Goff or Carson Wentz. You're trading up for Mitch Trubisky, basically. You know, all these guys have flaws. So, excuse me, I know it's supply versus demand, and to where we would say, like, okay, well, if you don't have a quarterback, it doesn't matter what it costs. You got to go get one. But that's a hard sell to an owner of, we're going to trade six picks for a quarterback that threw, you know, what, Sam Darnold turned the ball over 22 times. Or we're going to trade six picks for Josh Allen, who completed 56% of his passes, or Josh Rosen, who's been hurt the last 3 years, and depending on which way you vote, you might love or hate him, or Baker Mayfield, who not only got arrested in Fayetteville, he got caught by a cop. Like, that's the big problem in that video people aren't talking about. He got ran down by a cop in Arkansas. I mean, this isn't Florida or Texas. I'm from there. Cops aren't that athletic. So there are just so many problems with these guys that I would never feel comfortable moving up to that extent of. And then on the flip side, this is not a great draft. So if I'm sitting where you guys are, I don't want to go from 2 to 12 because the caliber of player is so much different. And even if you could say, okay, but you're going to go from 2 to 12 and get 22. Okay, well, who am I going to get at 22 that's going to start for the Giants? Because this draft is just not that good. And I would just sit at 2 and get a generational talent at running back, or get a plug-and-play all-pro guard, or have a dang good weak side linebacker of Bradley Chubb.
What's your sense for Denver? Are they willing to sit there and wait for whatever quarterback's left? Or do you think they're not going to take a quarterback? Or would they be a team that might maybe even move just one or two picks to go up to two, and then the Giants could still get either the guard, the D end, or the running back at number five?
Yeah, I was all aboard the Broncos taking a quarterback until I saw how aggressive they were in getting Case Keenum. And I honestly think that they've put themselves in a position to maybe just draft the best player available, because they do have a number of needs. They could be the landing spot for Barkley. They could be the landing spot for Nelson, Chubb, Minka. I mean, any of those guys that falls, especially if we do see four quarterbacks go, or three are definitely going to go in the top three, I would imagine, or could potentially go in the top three, and then Cleveland at four. So the Broncos are in a good spot to just sit and wait. And John Elway has an amazing amount of, like, a grace period there where you can miss on all these quarterbacks and a lot of other picks and still have a job and still be regarded as really good at your job. So I would think that he's in that spot where you're starting to feel some pressure, and there's some, you know, the local media is starting to talk. So maybe you sign your quarterback and then you draft Quentin Nelson at five, and, you feel a lot better about your first-round picks not going to miss this year.
I've got one more for you, Matt. Besides the quarterbacks probably up there in the top five or six, what's the next position that you're going to see a run on as we get to the middle or to the late first round?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it'll be the corners. You know, Denzel Ward's going to fly off pretty quickly, and then it comes down to guys like Josh Jackson, Jair Alexander, Mike Hughes. maybe Isaiah Oliver. The corner class is really good, and a lot of the guys are clustered together. So that's probably where we'll see a run. Offensive tackles, probably going to be late first round. Receivers, probably only going to be two, maybe three in the first round. So it's really – and the safety class is good as well. I mean, Minka and Derwin are going to go early. Justin Reed should go fairly early as well. Ronnie Harrison. So this is a great year to need secondary players.
All right, Matt, I got a couple rapid fires here in the last 3 or 4 minutes before we say goodbye. Bradley Chubb, what's his ceiling? Because I love the idea of picking a great pass rusher, but a lot of people think his athleticism limits his ceiling. What's his ceiling? How good could he be?
Yeah, I started to say that the other day on the podcast, and then I remembered how much bigger he is than me, so I backed off of it. I think his ceiling could be really good, not great. I know that people have said, oh, he's better than Myles Garrett. I think that's crazy talk. Other people have said, maybe he's Joey Bosa. I'm not that high on him. We actually, it's funny, doing some Giants radio, we compared him to Olivier Vernon as kind of a ceiling. I don't know that he's that twitchy, and he's probably a little more powerful, but I think that's kind of the type of guy that you're getting.
All right, how about Leighton Vander Esch? He's risen up a lot. Is it that people didn't know about his game tape and they're only figuring it out now? Or is he more of a postseason draft process guy that's moving up boards because of things that he didn't do on the field but because of what he's doing in shorts and T-shirt?
No, that's my dude. He is rising up. And when he declared, I can't remember if I tweeted and said he was top 40 or top 50. And then I went back and watched the coach's tape of the bowl game against Oregon. I was like, never mind, he's a first-rounder. And it seems like the more I've dug in on him as a person, we had him as a guest on our podcast, getting to talk to him, getting to know him, understanding his mindset, how he's wired. I just like him more and more. And then he just dominated his pro day. So it's not that he's a shorts and T-shirt guy. It's that the shorts and T-shirt matches the athleticism you see on film, where he can carry tight ends up the seam, he can blitz. He very, very good run fits. In a normal class where we didn't have like Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds, I think everyone would be talking about Leighton as a top 15 type guy.
Interesting. Ronald Jones, is he falling in the draft because he has not been able to perform in the postseason draft process?
No, I think it definitely hurts, and that's a thing where you really have to like trust your evaluators and trust the tape, and they probably have a junior, or for him it would be last year, a pro day time, and the hamstring injury is unfortunate at the pro day, but you can watch his film, and he's a 4.4 guy. I actually just pulled up my notes. He ran a 4.48 at his pro day today. So that's the time that you wanted to see for him.
Yeah.
He's shifty. He's elusive. He does well. Anything outside the hashes, even as a receiver. So it's just more about scheme fit. But I would expect that he's a guy that he and Sony Michel are the types of players you probably have to consider when it swings around to Friday night and you're starting to think, okay, if you don't take Saquon Barkley at two, maybe you can still fill out that running back position at the top of round two.
Absolutely. And two Giants-specific ones. I know you just mentioned Ronald Jones at running back. You got Sony Michel as well, deep class there. How about cornerback? The Giants have a need in the secondary. You mentioned you thought there might be a run in the first round on corners. Who do you think might be sitting there for the Giants at the top of round two, or maybe even top of round three, that you think would be good value that the Giants might be able to rely on in at least a sub-package role this year?
Yeah, this is a weird year where a lot of the top corners are kind of nickel guys, but I would look at Isaiah Oliver from Colorado as a top-round two guy. Mike Hughes from Central Florida, I know a lot of people have him as a top 15-type player. There's some character stuff there that has to get vetted out that could push him down the board a little bit. I still really like Carlton Davis from Auburn as a bigger, more physical outside-type corner. Nick Nelson and Duke Dawson, Duke Dawson from Florida, Nick Nelson from Wisconsin would be round three guys that I would think would be really good immediate slot type corners.
All right, Connor Williams. People are all over the map on this guy. Is there a chance that he's sitting there at the top of round two for the Giants to try a tackle and worst comes to worst, move him into guard?
No, I don't think so. That position, there's too much of a premium on it. And even look at last year in a better draft, Garrett Bowles went 20. And I think Connor Williams
exactly.
is a much better prospect. And doesn't have any of the off-field. He's not 25. He didn't bomb the Wunderlich. And, I mean, Garrett Bowles' background was scary. And Connor Williams is clean. I think the biggest questions with him, he's a little undersized. He got his butt whipped by Maryland. But before that, he'd never gonna have a sack in college. And I know it's the Big 12, but I would think his athleticism and traits would make him still a first-rounder.
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to ask you one more, Matt. I know John wanted to get through his list, but I'm going to cheat for one more guy since you're on the offensive line. Orlando Brown Jr. was a bust at the combine. He tested horribly. People thought he was going to drop like a block of cement, then did better at his pro day. Do you get a feeling for where the NFL teams think about him now? Is he still in down mode, or is he bouncing back up a bit?
I think I'm not saying this to toot my own horn. John knows I wouldn't do that. I had a third round grade on him before the combine. I think he's too stiff. He plays too tall. He can't. If you are an offensive tackle and you can't get leverage to strike, you can't win. And that's him. He's 6'8", 345. And I know he's worked hard to get his body in a better shape, but I think you can be too big. And especially when you don't bend well, and he doesn't. So I know there was a lot of love for him. I don't know how much of that's because he's a legacy kid. You know, his dad was someone that everyone loved. But I just don't see it. And I think you can watch the tape of Oklahoma anytime they went up against pretty good pass rusher. He struggled, and they would roll Baker right every chance they got to extend the play. So I still think Orlando Brown's probably a day three guy, but y'all got an offensive tackle that was drafted in the top 10 that I had graded in the third round. So what do I know?
All right, Matt, final thing. Give me your first and second round predictions, what you would do if you were the GM, and then what do you think the Giants will do?
If I were the GM, I would take Saquon Barkley, extend Eli Manning's career. You have a quarterback they drafted in the third round last year in Davis Webb that I liked as a developmental guy. And then I would come around and get a corner. I think Isaiah Oliver from Colorado would be a really good fit. And not to speak out of turn, I think a culture change is a little bit needed in some spots on that roster.
No, that's
and
fair.
He's the kind of guy I would want to build around. So what do I think they're going to do? Everything I've heard lately says Bradley Chubb, and then going to like a running back like a Sonny Michel at pick 33. So we got about three more weeks to figure it out, and Dave Gettleman always keeps things pretty close to the vest, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Matt, Paul loves Davis Webb. He's not going to ask, but I know since you said you liked him and he's in love with Davis Webb, so just give us your last year's scouting report on Webb and whether or not you think he could be the answer, and if so, why?
No, I think he could be. He's smart, and I know coming out of Cal you have to change your system a lot, but he has the mechanics, has the arm strength, he moves well for a big kid. It's just that transition going from an offense that's nothing like what they do in the NFL. So I would say be patient. It's unfortunate we didn't get to see him last year. Hopefully he gets a long, long run in the preseason so we can see what he's all about. But I do really like him.
Matt, you and I are going to be A-OK on that one, I promise you. Matt, we'll be the only two, but we'll be right.
That's all right. I'm good with that.
Matt, great stuff. We'll talk to you after the draft, buddy. Enjoy the rest of the process, and we'll enjoy reading your stuff online, all right?
Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thanks.
That's
Bye.
Matt Miller. He has to go tend to his sick kid. Does a great job. Bleacher Report. Stick to Football podcast. They're doing their NFL Draft 400, where he basically goes by position and they rank their top 400 prospects in the NFL Draft. It's at NFL Draft Scout on Twitter. He does a great job, and he's wonderful. So make sure you go check that out for good information on the draft there.
Yeah, he was the one who lost his voice and was feeling a little under the weather at the combine. Now it's his child. So
that's because the first night at the combine, when we all went to San Elmo Steakhouse, we saw him in the corner eating dinner with Zach Diossi. And then what happens when you do that? You lose your voice for 3 days. Thanks, Zach. I'm just kidding.
All right, what are we doing now? We're going to calls?
We will do calls.
All right, we're going to do calls.
Do you have any takeaways from that that you thought was interesting?
No, everything that he said was informative. I did think the one thing that he said that surprised me more than anything else, he said he's hearing a lot about the Giants going for Chubb. You know, I've heard a lot outside this building. Of course, we don't talk about what happens inside the building, but I've heard a lot outside the building talk about Barkley.
Matt talks a lot of people in the league, and you know how whispers start within league circles?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. It's a good question.
Even the NFL people that I've talked to, you know, Chubb is always in the conversation, but Barkley and Nelson clearly get more heat when I talk to people outside as well. So, I don't know. He seemed to indicate Chubb. That was a little strong for me. I didn't sense that outside the building, but maybe there is some heat for him. I don't know.
You know how a draft goes. It goes in cycles. Barkley was the guy 4 weeks ago. The last 2 weeks, a lot of the mock drafts, is it Dan Salamone tracks all the mock drafts, a lot of them are going to quarterbacks now for this section. And I'm sure the next section will be Chubb, and then whatever happens, happens. You know, because people change their mock drafts. They have to be able to put different players in different places. So these things tend to go in cycles.
Here's what I will say. Admitting this, when we first got to the combine, I had Barkley, Chubb, Nelson in that order. And then when we got to the combine, And I started talking to a lot more scouts and people who I respect very much. And they were like, Chubb is not going to be an all-world pass-rushing defensive end. You know, he's not Michael Strahan.
Now, see, here's the thing.
You know, and I'm like, all right. And I changed my flop.
I know you did.
And I made Nelson my guy after the first day of the combine. That's it. It was like Barkley, Nelson, Chubb.
Here's the thing. Ms. Chubb was only a 3-star prospect coming out of high school. And that speaks to the athleticism limitations that Matt mentioned when I asked him about Chubb. Mm-hmm. And that's why I asked him the question. The question is, can he be one of those guys that's just so good technically and works so hard and all that other stuff and is so smart that he can be that great player despite not having elite athleticism? It's possible, but can you bet on that with the second overall pick in the draft? That's a tough sell.
Well, you know, when you get longtime veteran NFL people who say to you that, hey, he's by far the best defensive end pass rusher in this draft, but if he was in one of any other draft or the last 10 drafts, he would not be anywhere near the number two or number three overall pick.
Well,
he'd be more like a top 10. When I hear that kind of stuff.
I would say last year he'd probably be somewhere around maybe five or six, you know, give or take.
All right, but that's not top three.
I understand.
So, you know, so that's why I slid Chubb down, despite the Football 101 mantra that – if you're in a real dilemma and you're not sure what to do and you're not really thinking this blue chip, you go for the pass rusher. That's the mantra. So that's what had me putting Chubb up higher until the combine. More information came in. It's now Barkley, Nelson, Chubb, and that's where it's been now for the last month for me.
All right, Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune will join us in about 10 minutes. Until then, let's get in a couple of calls at 201-939-4513. Christian in New York is up next. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. About Bradley Chubb, I can't really be a fan of that at number two because it sounds like he's going to go that high because he's a defensive end and not because of how special of a player he's going to be.
Yeah, I understand that.
It just seems like a lot of guys are going to be so much better at their position than him in this particular draft.
Well, the question is, Christian, would you rather have a B-plus pass rusher or an A guard or an A running back?
Right.
And
right.
I think
I'm
you can make the argument
he might
that
not even be a B-plus.
Right. Not well. I I don't know about that. I think you're downgrading him a little bit because if you look at free agency, for example, a B-plus pass rusher will get – well, I'm serious.
He's going to get a lot of money.
He'll get paid more than an A running back or an A guard.
Yeah.
They are. I mean, look how much money Olivier Vernon got from the Giants. Look at the Jason Pierre-Paul contract. So NFL teams do view B-plus ends as more valuable than an A running back. So I think it's a fair question to ask, and it's something that these front offices will have to weigh.
Yeah, and not only that, but – I don't even see him as like a must-have for the scheme anymore because I know Betcher is not like committing to just the 3-4, but the stand-up rushers come into play a lot more than they used to for the Giants now.
Well, there are those who think that Chubb will do some of that, though. There are those who think that Chubb will do some stand-up defensive end
work. He only weighs like 260. He should be fine doing
270,
that.
I thought.
Okay, he might be right. I'll have to
check. But don't just disqualify him. But I think your point is well taken. Despite the fact that Bedra said yesterday that scheme is not going to determine the identity of this defense.
Chubb is more of a traditional 4-3 DN.
He is. He is.
Yeah.
But what I do believe, the caller is right on one thing.
269.
I do believe that Betcher's fluid aspects to his defense where, you know, he's going to be sending all kinds of firehouse and zone blitzes to get pressure. You don't necessarily have to get it from that defensive end spot.
Yep.
So you make a good point there. The necessity of getting the heat from that guy on the field is lessened in Betcher's scheme.
Yeah, and I don't see Bradley Chubb being a hand-in-the-dirt 3-4 end because he's kind of a little light for that.
No, he's not.
And you do not, under any circumstance, draft a guy second overall to play 3-4 defensive end.
No. Bad idea.
Yes.
And I feel like the second, third-round pass rushers, it just might be a better bargain based on what you're paying for the guy and might not be in miles behind Chubb.
Christian, that's maybe where I'll disagree with you. These pass rushers fall off a cliff after the first couple.
They fall off a cliff.
After you get past the top of the second round, you ain't finding one.
There's not much.
I mean, I guess Arden Key is kind of a big risk in this draft.
Yeah, and you know, he's
a
big
somebody at 34.
No, Arden Key is a big risk, but he's going to be gone at the top of the second. He's going to be gone in the first half of the second round.
Yeah, if you want a pass rusher later on, it's going to have to be one of those outside linebackers who you're going to wind up sending. And even those guys are not super dominant, or they'd be first-round picks.
You know, Sam Hubbard, he's a guy that's not even a dynamic pass rusher. He's going to be a second-round pick, too.
Do you think Nwosu could possibly last to 34?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Nwosu might be there at the top of the third round.
Possibly. Yep.
I just think Bradley Chubb might be kind of overvalued in this draft, but maybe, like, if we traded back to, like, 12, I would like him there.
Well, he ain't going to be there at 12, brother. He ain't going to be there at 12. Thanks for the call, Christian. We appreciate it.
He wants his cake and eat it, too. Yeah, that's his problem.
Well, I'd love to trade down to 12 and draft Saquon Barkley. That'd be great. Well, ain't going to happen either.
It's okay. I understand the dilemma. There's a lot of ways you can open up this conversation into where's his value, where does he really belong, should you go another position. I get it. It's an interesting conversation.
I don't think you'd be furious if they picked him at 2, though.
Again, he's my fourth choice at number 2. The possible trade, Barkley,
okay.
Nelson, Chubb.
But of the players, he's your third choice.
Of the players, he's my third choice.
Okay.
And if it's not one of those guys, look, on the outside of that, I guess Fitzpatrick would be my next guy if I had to go one more player deep. And you said to me, Paul, give me another guy.
No, that's a good question.
Fitzpatrick is probably my next guy.
Who would be my fourth guy? I don't know. It's a good question. Because it used to be Minka, but the more I've read, maybe Denzel Ward. I think about him. Do you think about Roquan Smith or Tremaine Edmonds? Do you think about the linebacker there? Maybe.
I just think that Fitzpatrick's ability to play any of the four positions plus the nickel or slot,
that
gives him extra value.
Paul, I got no problem with Minka Fitzpatrick. He'd definitely be in the mix.
He'd be my next guy down.
Q in Newark. We haven't talked to Q in a while. What's up, buddy?
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Paulie D?
What's going on?
Paulie D and Schmoke, how you guys doing?
We're great. How are you, Q?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I was listening to the guy that was just the guest I was just on, and I want to say I just disagree with one thing. When I think you guys asked him what would he do if he was the general manager, he said Barkley. And I know that's the Giants fans' favorite pick, a running back. And
you
I'm
think so?
Thinking,
you know, yeah. Q, you think so? No, take it from me.
Thinking,
their favorite pick is a quarterback.
Now, but Paul, here's the thing. Here's
exactly,
the thing for me.
That's exactly what I'm saying to myself, Smilk, that we just drafted two running backs back-to-back years. And we signed the guy from the Panthers. I forget his name. Stewart?
Yep.
Yes.
The veteran running back. I love Barkley, not at number 2. I don't care how dynamic he is. I don't care what he does coming out the backfield. I don't care how many blitzes he pick up. Not at 2.
Okay.
Not when we have a 37-year-old quarterback that is at the wrong end of 30. And I understand, you know, everybody wants this dynamic running back. I guess they think he's going to open up our offense, but I love what our new GM has came right in and said. Because every time I called up, that was the first thing I said. The trenches. That's how you win in the NFL. And as soon as he came, that's the first thing he said. You know what I did? I started dancing because I love that. That's the kind of guy that I am. And I honestly, you have to get solidified the trenches. You won't win anything in this league if you don't solidify the trenches. So my point, I'm going to piggyback off that by saying that, okay, we signed this left tackle guy to 60-something million, but he's 30 years old. And I'm thinking about, okay, and then the other guy that we signed, I'm sorry, I'm just speeding through this because I know you have other callers to come in. I don't the new left guard, I think that's what he's going to be, a left guard, a right guard, whatever he is.
Yep.
He's almost 32.
Right.
So my point that I'm saying
32?
Is that, okay,
I love what he's doing,
but we need depth and youth behind. I mean, what if the left tackle gets hurt? we're right back in the same position that we was for several years. So my point is, because I want to touch on something else, that I want Hog Mollies. Hog Mollies, Hog Mollies, Hog Mollies.
So you want Nelson.
And that's another thing I was going to bring it up. That's going to pick up off that. Nelson, I think not at number two. I would love to have him. I mean, if we can't get what we want, I would love to take him. But I see the same thing in him that I see in Will Hernandez.
Wait, so Q. Hold on one second.
Who are you taking?
So, time out. If you can't trade down and you're sitting there too and you have to pick a player, who are you taking?
Out of who?
Anybody. Anybody but Sam Darnold.
I would probably want to take a QB if I'm going to stay there.
That's fine.
That's only pending on what we get to see from Davis Webb. I really don't want to take a quarterback because I really think that we haven't showcased him yet as far as seeing what he can do as far as playing. So I still have hope for him.
All right,
so I would probably, you know what, to be honest with you, I'm between Chubb and Nelson. I'll probably pick those two.
Right. Thank you, Q. Appreciate the call, bud.
And it's funny,
you can tell he's conflicted, and I understand. But you have some love for Quentin Nelson, and that's a good transition to
many
our next
people
guest.
Are conflicted.
And that is Eric Hansen. He writes for the South Bend Tribune. He's been covering Notre Dame for a long time, and he's our go-to Notre Dame expert. Eric, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you today?
I'm great, and I'm not conflicted.
And that's because you don't have the second pick of the draft.
Well, and it's also because he's been watching Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey for 4 years, pleasure to do. So let's talk about those two guys a little bit, Eric, and start right there. Is Quentin Nelson the best? And you've seen a lot of good ones. Is Quentin Nelson the best offensive lineman you've seen in your years covering Notre Dame?
In the version of him in 2017, I would say yes. I thought he was the best player in college football this year at his position, at what he did. Certainly the guys that were invited to New York for the Heisman were really good and impacted the game in different ways. But I thought, if you watch film and Quentin Nelson makes you want to do that, he impacts the game so greatly in not so subtle ways. And so, yeah, I mean, there's been some great linemen, Ronnie Stanley, Zach Martin. It's hard to mm-hmm. say Quentin Nelson over Zach Martin, but I truly believe that the final version of Quentin Nelson is better than the final college version of Zach Martin.
He devours people. Look, I'm gonna make it really hard for you, Eric, because I think it's universal. Everybody that I've talked to around the league says this guy is as blue chip, a guaranteed lock, terrific player in the NFL as you could possibly find. Give me a flaw. What does he not do well? Get the microscope out. What's he going to have to improve on if he's going to meet expectations?
Maybe be a more verbose interview, as far as off-the-field stuff. He addressed those. I mean, early in his career, he was not the best pass blocker. He was not the best guy at dealing with pre-snap motion. And so as a younger player, those were kind of the things that you picked at. As a run blocker, he was always a road grader and just ate people up. But then you saw, especially this last year, this transition to a guy that would pick up blitzes on the other side of the line and just showed so much athleticism for a 330-pound human being. And I know you're asking for weaknesses, but, you know, this is a guy that was supposed to be really great coming out of high school. He was one of the best left tackles in his class. And Harry Heastand, the offensive line coach, says, we're going to make you a guard. And he did not blink because, you know, usually left tackle, that's the glamour position. That's mm-hmm. the position that gets paid in the NFL. And he said, okay, I'll just be the best at that. So back to weaknesses. I'm sorry, I can't really think of one at this point. I could have picked him in other years, but he's really addressed those.
Well, you mentioned he was a tackle coming out of high school, and that'll be my last question on Nelson, just because he's so good, there's not really much else to say about the kid.
No.
Could an NFL team, you think, experiment a little bit and slide him out to tackle to see if he could handle that spot, or do you think the way he's kind of developed his body and his game that he is now a permanent fixture at guard?
I think if you wanted to do that, you could to me, it's kind of like, why would you want to do that?
Right.
Because he's so good at what he does. I mean, you're talking about a guy that maybe drafted the highest guard since Bill Frelick came out decades ago and was a tackle at Pitt that ended up being a guard in the pros, you know, picked that high. I think he'd be an adequate tackle. I think he's a star at guard, so I wouldn't move him.
You know, I'm going to ask you one more on him. The heat that you're hearing out there around campus, is there a lot of heat that he could be a Giant at number two, or is there another team that seems to be catching more fire for him?
I know that he'd love to be a Giant because he's from New Jersey, and his dad would do backflips if that happened. But, you know, I'm hearing that there's some interest there in most of the mocks, and we don't follow it as close as you guys do. And most of the mocks, we're seeing him going a little bit later in the top 10. You know, there's a lot of momentum for him to go to the Bears at 8 and rejoin Harry Hiestand there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the top 5. I don't know enough about – I was listening to your other caller. He sounded like you wanted – quarterback at that number two spot, but I think, you know, again, guards just don't go that high, but Quentin Nelson is such a unique player. If I were a GM, I'd certainly be very, very tempted to take him that high.
All right, let's go to his teammate, plays right next to him. He's played right tackle, he's played left tackle, he's simply a very solid player, Mike McGlinchey, another 5-year senior, 6'7". You watch him on tape, he just looks like he belongs. You listen to him talk, he sounds like he belongs. Mm-hmm. What kind of development have you seen from McGlinchey over the course of his career in Notre Dame?
Really light years. He was kind of the opposite of Quentin, even though he's Matt Ryan's cousin, and so he comes from really good bloodlines, and they grew up together at the same Thanksgivings, the same beach vacations and so forth. He was a project. You know, he played at a small school in Philadelphia. He played every position, I think, but quarterback, played primarily tight end. So he came to Notre Dame, this raw athlete with a lot of high ceiling about him, but really had to be developed because he had some really bad habits. And Harry Hiestand felt like this eventually would be a guy that could be the starting left tackle, but he had to work through all those flaws, and Mike has done that. He's gotten better each year. You know, again, was first starting spot was on the right tackle, had some growing pains in 2016 as the starting left tackle, ironed a lot of those out. I think his best football's still ahead of him. Now, he's a guy that's an amazing interview and will, you know, could be the face of a franchise if he's at a franchise where they allow left tackles or right tackles to do that. But I think Mike's just getting better and better. He's a guy that came back to Notre Dame after a 4-8 season and had a first-round draft grade and could have had his degree, could have gone out as a fourth-year senior and came back. So there's a lot to like about McGlinchey besides the potential.
Let me give you a hypothetical here, John. Let's say the Giants make that deal with the Bills and they move down to 12. So, Eric, I ask you this. Is he worth a number 12 overall? Because the Giants did spend a lot of money on Nick Soldier to play left tackle. McGlinchey would have to play right tackle if he were drafted by the Giants that low at number 12. I kind of think I'd be okay with that because then I'd kick Eric Flowers into right guard.
Well, the thing about Mike is I like that as well. Mike, you know, I asked him on pro day, I said, you know, there's people talking about you being a right tackle, maybe even playing some guard. What do you think about that? And he says, hey, look, I'll play anywhere that'll help the team. And I think he'd be a really good right tackle. I think he'd be a really good fit. I just still think his best football is ahead of him because of how far he had to come. Nelson didn't have to go that far. McGlinchey really did because, again, you know, you're at a small school. They're going to coach the guys that can't play. They're not going to coach the stud. Mm-hmm. So he had a long way to come. And again, even in his own recruiting class, he was supposed to be the fourth best, you know, by the rivals and those guys that rate kids come out of high school. He's only the fourth best lineman in his class and ends up being the starting left tackle and a future first-round draft choice.
The one knock I've heard on Mike McGlinchey, Eric, is that maybe he has some trouble with speed rushers and they'll bend the edge on him a little bit because he can't get out there to handle their speed around the edge. Do you think that is a fair criticism of him?
I think he's had times where that happened in games. I think if you watch the Georgia game early last year, there was a sack late in the game where Brandon Wimbush, the first-year starting quarterback, got nailed from the backside, and that was McGlinchey's guy. I don't think it's a consistent problem. I think it's something that he's gotten better at. He certainly has the length to be able to deal with that at 6'8", and with that long wingspan, and he had Nelson next to him too. But I think that's something that's going to continue to get better for him. But, you know, I talked to Mike Mayock right after Pro Day, and he said, this is a flawed tackle class. But he was absolutely convinced that Mike McGlinchey was the best in this class of guys that are maybe not finished products.
So he probably doesn't get down to the low first round then, by all stretches. And if the Giants were, let's say, top 20. Yeah, they can't go down too far to even think about if he's on their radar. Or for that matter, even if they wanted to trade up from the second round to get into the lower first, he's probably going to be gone by everything that you've probably heard.
I would say so. I think in his pro day especially, he kind of separated himself a little bit from the other tackles.
Yeah.
People, you know, talked about this being the best pro day for linemen they ever saw, and he was part of that. It wasn't just Quentin. But you know, the Giants may not feel like there's a big difference between those tackles. There may be other teams that do think there's a big difference between McGlinchey and the other guys. So I'm not quite sure what they're thinking, but I don't think, you know, you saw some mock drafts initially where he was down at the bottom of the first round. You don't see too many of those anymore. So I think he would be gone before somebody in the late 20s or around 30 would be able to get to him.
We're joined by Eric Hansen, South Bend Tribune, covers Notre Dame football. Paul, can I jump to the next guy?
Yeah, go.
One of the guys with the best names in the draft, Equanimeous St. Brown. I tell you what, we saw him out at the combine. He looks the part. He's big. He's tall. He's fast. But there's just not a lot of production, Eric. Was that his fault, or is that just a product of what the Notre Dame quarterback situation's been?
I think it's a little bit of both. He had pretty good production his sophomore year, which was the first year he played a lot. And he had DeShone Kizer throwing to him that year. And then he had Brandon Wimbush this year, and Brandon had some problems. But and Equanimeous got some extra attention into the boundary, especially earlier in the year when their speed receiver was suspended. Once he came back and kind of acclimated himself, the defensive attention kind of shifted to that side of the field, and you still didn't see a huge leap in Equanimeous's productivity. He had moments. I don't think he was as consistent as he could have been. I don't think he fought for 50-50 balls as hard as he could have. I think as he got into the pre-draft process, he's tried to address those things. I like where he's going, but again, he's not a guy that I – you know, would invest, you know, a high round draft pick. I think he's kind of a middle round guy. He's impressive, and I think he has a chance to turn into something really special. But I think there are more sure things out there than Equanimeous. I hate to say that, but that's my observation of him.
Well, let me ask you this then, Eric. I mean, they're listing him at 6'5", 214, and a 4.48. It seems to me, had he stayed in school for one more year, he might have been able to erase a lot of what you're talking about, and who knows, he might have been a first-round pick if he had come out at 19.
I hear that from a lot of people, and, you know, you talk to Equanimeous, and his thought is, and, you know, his dad was a bodybuilder, and he's, you know, all three of those kids play wide receiver in college. The middle boy is at Stanford, the youngest son is going to be an absolute star at USC. He's an incoming freshman. but you know, they're kind of groomed that, you know, I mean, people compare them a little bit to the LeVar Ball family, and Equanimeous says that's not an unfair comparison. And so I think he's just programmed that he was ready and that, you know, he feels very confident in his ability, and why stay studying in school for another year when he can go play pro football? He knew he wasn't going to be a first-round draft pick, but he just felt like, you know, now was the best time for him to go.
How about Dorum Smythe? The Giants probably not in the market for a tight end. I know some people, you know, think this tight end class will have a lot of guys go in the middle rounds, not a lot of guys very high. What did you see from him? What type of player is he coming out of Notre Dame?
I really like him. I mean, it's hard to compare him to guys like Kyle Rudolph, you know, that just have that high-end catching ability. But Dorum Smythe is a guy that I think can play in the NFL and be really effective. He does everything well. He's a good blocker. He's a good pass catcher. He's good in the red zone. He's a great off-the-field guy, great leader. You know, he's not as dynamic as some of the tight ends that come out of Notre Dame and some of them that are currently on the roster. But I'll tell you what, he stayed ahead of those guys on the depth chart because, again, he's just consistent. You know what you're going to get from him, and I think he's going to make some GM very happy with a, you know, not really high-round pick.
Third-day running back, Josh Adams. How about a thumbnail on him should the Giants decide that they don't want to get one of the top-tier running backs and just look to add depth? What are his chances of making some type of impact in the pros?
He's an interesting guy. He, out of high school, he was not highly recruited. He had had a knee injury, was only kind of regionally recruited other than Notre Dame. And I remember seeing him in his first fall camp going, whoa, he's a lot faster than I thought he'd be. And he's a big, tall kid. He does have incredible acceleration once mm-hmm. he gets into the open field. His first 10 yards are it that way. And so sometimes you would see him kind of get bottled up against teams like Miami or Georgia, where there was a lot of speed in the linebacker core. But, I mean, he can outrun defensive backs. He just needs to kind of get that stride going. I think the question about him is how good of a receiver he'd be. You know, he didn't do that a lot in college, whether it was by design or whether they just felt like there were other people that could handle that better. But I like him a lot. I think with a middle-round draft choice, that's a perfect place to take him and just see what he could turn into.
And then finally, how about Niles Morgan?
Niles, I'll tell you what, he's kind of unknown because he played the entire season with a shoulder injury that required surgery. He was not invited to the combine, but wouldn't have been able to do anything anyways. He wasn't able to do everything at the pro day, but he had only been cleared to run like a week and a half or two before his pro day. He's a really good athlete. He's a film rat, really smart kid. I absolutely, you know, if you had a seventh round pick or an undrafted free agent, I would absolutely get him in my camp because he would be outstanding on special teams. And he's a guy that could develop and surprise. I really like Niles Morgan's game.
Eric, great stuff. We really appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Hey, take care. Always good to hear from Eric. He had some Notre Dame spring football going on today. We thank him for giving us the time.
For sure.
Covers Notre Dame for the South Bend Tribune. All right, guys, we got 10 minutes. We got your calls. And I don't think Eric told us anything we didn't know about the Notre Dame guys. I think we had those guys pretty well laid out for us.
For months, it's been like nitpick. Try to find something,
yep.
Something to drop these guys from the upper echelons of the draft. And you got the best tackle, you got the best guard, and they're coming out of the same offensive line. That's just the way it is.
All right, let's get to your calls. I got three guys in the line. I got 10 minutes. Let's get you all in. Jay in Philly's up first. What's up, Jay?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Doing well, Jay.
Good. Hey, I want to talk to receivers. Beckham and Shepard, Marshall, are they healthy now?
Marshall and Odell are still rehabbing their injuries.
Correct.
Sterling, as far as my understanding is healthy.
Okay, that's good enough. Listen,
I don't know. We just got married. I don't know about that.
SMU.
Yeah, Courtland Sutton.
Oh, yeah. Y'all like that guy?
You know, Courtland Sutton is a funny case because I don't think he's a great route runner, but he's might be the best overall size, speed, athlete combination in the draft. He can go up and get the ball. He can make plays. But I think you wonder, if he has the technical wide receiver skill to run the full route tree and be consistent in that way.
Well, you know, he was on ESPN. That's how I seen him. And he was talking about the route tree. You know, he said he thinks he's running the route tree better than anybody that's in the draft so far.
Well, I don't think he's running it better than Calvin Ridley.
I doubt that.
You know they're going to say that.
Now, of course.
You know.
I think he's probably a very solid second-round pick.
If you really need a receiver, you pick him late one, early two. I think that's reasonable.
But
you think
Giants
try to get a receiver like that?
No.
Or what?
I would be surprised if they took a receiver that high. Look, you have Odell Beckham, who was a first-round pick. You got Sterling Shepard, who was a second-round pick. You got Evan Ingram, who was a first-round pick. And then they have a veteran in Brandon Marshall. That's a lot of assets put into a wide receiver position. I don't think they'll use another high pick on another receiver. Eli's got enough weapons if the guys are healthy.
I'll tell you what. I do think the Giants will take a receiver at some point in the draft. It's not going to be high.
It'll be day three.
But I think they'll take one, probably day three. And if they don't, look for them to get one of these super sleeper guys in free agency as a rookie free agent, like when they picked up Victor Cruz out of UMass, and nobody had any idea he was going to be what he was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's all I got for today, man. Y'all guys take it easy, man.
Thank you, Jay.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I just don't think there's a need there. And I know you don't worry about need
there
a
is
lot
a
of the
need
time,
for competition.
But it's not.
Not a need for a frontline starter. That's
correct.
The difference.
Which is why, yeah, big look.
That's the difference.
Guys, you get to day three, and I'm a big proponent of this. On day three, it's hard enough to find a guy that's going to start in the NFL someday. It's really hard to find a guy in 4, 5, 6, or 7. It's really hard. So I don't care what position the guy plays. If there's a guy that's sitting there on the board that you think, really believe could be a starter in this league, you pick him. I don't care what your need is. You pick that guy. Because if you start drafting by need in the 5th and 6th and 7th rounds, guess what? You're not going to get a very good player.
No.
No. 201-939-4513. Adam in Columbus, Ohio is up next. Hi, Adam.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
What's up, buddy?
You know, for me, I'm a Saquon at number 2 guy. And let me qualify that. If the Browns grab Saquon and we get Quentin Nelson, I'm not a guy who's going to be disappointed either.
Okay.
You know, I think it's nice to see someone who's that good and that head and shoulders above the next best option. But to me, the NFL is a league of windows. You know, you need to get the guys that are good enough to win, and you need to get them before they're too expensive that you can afford them. I think something people overlook when they screen quarterback, quarterback, quarterback is, one, what is the margin? How much better are any of these guys in people's estimation than Davis Webb could potentially be? And two, if you sign Webb to that second contract, pay Odell while you can keep, you know, presumably Saquon and Ingram on their first rookie contract, does that not allow you to cost control? I mean, is it not a safe assumption to say that Webb on a second contract, if he can be the guy, is going to be a much more cost-efficient and much, tremendously higher value than any other good quarterback on a second contract?
How do you have any idea how much Davis Webb's second contract is going to cost?
Well, I mean, obviously, I don't know that, sure, but the reason I'm speculating that he might be cost-efficient is this. If we keep Eli for another year or two, it minimizes, you know, it creates more of a risk in re-signing Webb.
Adam, I got a question.
So it's analogous to drafting a guy, right?
Adam, how much money did Jimmy Garoppolo get this offseason after playing 5 games last year?
A lot.
Well, that's five more than Davis Webb has played, though.
No, but you aren't signing him to a second contract today. You're signing him to a second contract in 3 years when you assume he's going to have played at least half a season or a full season.
Okay, but if you sign him and you extend him quicker, right? You give him, hey, here's 8 to 10 mil or something along those lines before you become a franchise guy.
Yeah, Davis Webb's not going to say yes to that, though. Yeah, but Adam, why would Davis Webb take pennies on the dollar when he can get playing time and then make Jimmy Garoppolo money?
I love your end game, but the reasoning and how you're getting there is not making a lot of sense. If you really want to sell your argument, and I'm with you 100%, I'm not taking a quarterback. I believe in Davis Webb. We're on the same page here. But to sell that argument, one of the things you have to do is say, okay, by all stretches of the imagination, the Giants, Dave Gettleman has said, that guy at number 2 has to be someone you could see fitted for a gold jacket many years down the road, okay? Well, in every conversation you have heard from Dave Gettleman or Coach Shermer or Coach Shula, Not once have you heard them talk about any of these quarterbacks as Pro Bowl, as elite, as excellent.
Time out. They weren't asked about them.
The only thing you've ever heard is they have been many times. I have it on tape. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you. My point was just that I think the cost control factor is something that's being overlooked. I mean, you what is Foles getting? What is Bridgewater getting? What did Case
Keenum
just get?
If Eli's going to play this year and next year, which he may play another year after this, he has another year on his contract.
And Case Keenum's making $20 million. You know, so let's not call it $20 million a year cost control. Please.
Yeah, you can't. You can't. But the point is, if Eli finishes out his contract, he's here this year and next year, and Davis Webb is still on his rookie deal. That you can argue about cost control, but beyond that, you can't. But the point is... Right, and that's fine, but that's not really relevant to what you're doing with this year's quarterback class. You already have an inexpensive quarterback backing up Eli. If you want to say that that's a good thing, that's a good thing. But the new quarterbacks that are coming out this year are not going to get a ton more money anyway.
Yeah, Adam, the bottom line is that by the time you re-sign Davis Webb, you're going to know more about him, okay? And by the way,
I agree, absolutely.
So if he shows that he's a very good quarterback, you're going to have to pay him. Period.
At some point.
Yeah. You aren't going to get him on the cheap. That's not how this works.
But,
I mean, for example, Mike Glennon, who's done nothing in the league, look at the money he got from the Bears last year. I mean, you don't get quarterbacks on the cheap.
No, but here's what he's here's where I think we're totally on different paths here. What you're saying is, I think, and you're agreeing to my point, that if Eli's here for two more years, Webb isn't signing any contract extension in the next 2 years.
Of course not.
Okay, so he is on the cheap.
No, but his point was that you don't draft the quarterback because you can get Webb on his second contract cheaper than quarterbacks you draft.
But that's where he goes off the road. That's where you're going off the road. You can't talk to me about what's happening 3 years down the road with the contract certainty. You can't do that. Because you have no idea. For all we know, maybe Eli signs an extension. Maybe he wins a Super Bowl in a year or two, and he decides I'm going to play two more years and play past these 40.
You're saying that I'm wrong in the likelihood of Davis Webb's next contract is not coming into the analysis.
I don't think you can even discuss that right now. I don't think you can. I think the Giants are playing this right now as for what they've got and what they're trying to do this year, and cost analysis is not nearly
you,
as big a factor.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
All right.
And look, I don't think it's impossible. Look, Davis, you might be able to get him on a cheaper second contract, maybe, but the amount of things that can happen between now and then, there's so many, there's just no way to count on that.
To be honest, how do you even know that Davis Webb will play well enough to deserve a second contract?
To make a good point.
And I happen to love the guy.
I know you do.
But I can't guarantee you that.
You don't. All right, let's go to Scott in New Mexico. He'll be our final caller of the show. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. Had a question about the linebackers that are coming out in the draft, but since my time is short, I just want to ask about one specific one.
No, go ahead.
He's not getting a lot of attention, even though both of you saw him at the Combine and at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
And that's Shaquin Griffin. And I was wondering, I know Tremaine Edwards and Rokan Smith are probably your two top picks, but could the Giants actually use somebody like that? He was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He was also the main catalyst as to why UCF won or was undefeated. And yet he's not getting as much attention. I know about the physical impairment, but if you watch him run laterally side to side, he's probably the fastest I've ever seen. He's probably faster than most cornerbacks and wide receivers coming out in the draft. So do you think the Giants might consider somebody like that in the third round? And I'll take the answer off. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. I think top of the third round might be a little rich for Griffin. I think top of the fourth round, you're more in the sweet spot for him. I think Paul and I both like him. We think he's going to be a good NFL player, and worst comes to worst, he's just a dynamic special teams guy. I think he can play in a sub-package. I think he's that type of athlete. I think top of the third round might be a little bit rich for my blood, but if he's sitting there at the top of the fourth to start day three, I'm all in.
Appreciate his athleticism. Appreciate his attitude. Appreciate his production. I could not pull the trigger on him. And I think that...
In any round?
I could not. I could not.
Come on. You want to pick him in the seventh round?
Well, He'll be a better athlete than anybody who's going to be in the seventh round. There's no question about that.
So what's your cutoff point?
Sixth round, maybe?
Yeah, all right.
Sixth round?
Six.
I have seen JPP lose so much effectiveness with that mitt on his hand.
Remember, though, he's had it his whole life.
And that's the counter. We talked about this at the Combine with each one of our experts. Mm-hmm. My problem, and I can't get over it, and it's a personal thing for me, and I'm not the GM, I'm not making the pick. This is personal. I could not do it, not because I'm biased or prejudiced against the fellow in any way at all. My goodness, he deserves all the credit in the world for becoming an NFL prospect and overcoming everything that he's had to do. But I've seen JPP play with that mitt on his hand, and I've seen his effectiveness drop dramatically every time that he was playing one-handed. I can't – that's not Griffin's fault. It's not. He has nothing to do with that. But that vision of JPP's dramatic loss in production is embedded in my head. I can't get over it. And I would punish Griffin for that unjustly and not take him. And I apologize. That's not his fault. But I'm being honest.
I got a couple of Twitter things for you real quick.
All right, let's do this.
Mink at number two. He thinks he has a higher upside than Bradley Chubb. That's from Matthew Teske.
Wow.
Would he be a better option than Chubb at two for you, or no?
He's still not, but it's, again, he's just on the outside looking in for my inner circle at number two. I would not complain if they took him, because he's that close to being on the perimeter there, but I would not do it myself.
Okay. Folks, good stuff. Meadow, Dottino, tomorrow. What school you got tomorrow?
Georgia,
because good players coming out of Georgia. The two running backs, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, make sure you stay tuned.
Exactly.
And depending on what the Giants do at one, those two guys could be in the mix in the second round. So make sure you tune in tomorrow noon for that with Dottino and Meadow. We'll see you then. Have a great one on Giants.com.